ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Life's a lottery anyway. And I just don't see any point in trying to turn it into a series of multis. That's good. We should put that on a T-shirt and sell it.
That is Sean McAuliffe on his new TV series, Going for Broke. Do you know Australians lose more than $30 billion annually gambling? More than $8 billion of that is on sports gambling. $8 billion. There's 22 million adults in Australia. So if everyone over 18 was on the punt, they'd be losing $363 a year. Lucky cost of living is so manageable right now. We love a punt. For the so-called lucky country, though, we lose a lot. So why do we love sports gambling? We're asking McAuliffe. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Sean McAuliffe's new show, Going for Broke, examines Australia's love of gambling. Sean, by definition, love is a good thing, but losing money is bad. So what is it like making a show where you're explaining to Australians that their love is deeply corrupted? Is it a bit like telling a good friend that their wife or husband is just plain awful?
Yeah, you've got to be careful, because you know that if you say that and they split up, And you say all those things, and then they get back together in a couple of weeks' time, and you know you're not invited to the barbecues anymore. So I had to be very careful, because I guess I didn't really have an opinion either way about gambling. I certainly had no moral judgment about it. I'm not, banging a drum dressed as a Salvation Army officer, singing "Bringing in the Sheaves," and it wasn't anything like that. I was curious as to what it was that meant that it floated some people's boat. The idea of gambling, like the tension. The suspense, I guess, between placing the bet and getting the result is the thing that people love. I mean, obviously, if you win, you love that bit, but it's the addictive thing, I think, is that rush of adrenaline and endorphins during the race. It's the thrill of that. I just worry too much, so it doesn't do it for me. And other people, they don't care either way, and then other people, you know, love it a bit too much. So it's a story for everybody, because we all know somebody who might have had some trouble, I suppose. You know, that should concern us.
We're a sports podcast, so we're sort of intrinsically drawn to the sports element of it rather than the sort of pokies element of it. And it was at times watching it like having a giant mirror held up to yourself. Like there are parts of it that I found challenging in the sense of, like, I've got a punting group and it's become a crucial piece of like connective tissue from a social point of view. And it's probably not that healthy. Like, was that something that you saw over and over again making the show?
So your group, is this betting through an app?
Yes.
That's interesting. And what about the podcast? Do you find that over the years the language has changed a bit? So when you talk about sport, you're often using the language of betting. It's increasingly intrusive, the nature of betting. It becomes sometimes the whole point of watching a game is not so much that you're invested personally in a team you barrack for, but because you got some money riding.
No, but it's exciting, you know, like.
Because then if you win, you're like really excited, I guess. So you get the winning feeling.
What if there's money?
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's the major change. That's the thing I've noticed the most. And I was curious about your experience, whether you feel it's changed as well. Don't even think about it. Just, do you feel that it's changed and moving towards the point where gambling and the sport itself is inextricably connected?
I'd like to think that I've been able to keep it pretty professional, like from a podcasting standpoint, but I have worked in the sports broadcasting industry for both the ABC and externally for 2 decades. And I feel like I've been a frog in boiling water, or like a punter drowning in multis. It's been a slow burn. Like, as an outsider, did you feel as though there was a moment in the series that drove home the connection between sport and gambling and how entwined they are?
Yeah, there was. I mean, and again, because I've got no skin in the game, because I'm not really a person who watches sport, I was able to come in as a very, very scrubbed clean skin and experience it for the first time. For example, I watched my first NRL match. I've never seen it, never seen a game played before all the way through. You know, you see bits of it on the news. But so I'm sitting there with there's some families get together for a barbecue. And I thought, wow, this is really hard to follow, not because of the game, but because you've got to filter out the advertising, which is on field. The try posts are covered in, you know, I think it might be a sports bet bolster around there, because if you hit your head on the thing, you know, you actually cushion the blow with a sports bet ad. Oddly enough, the kids watching it with me were talking about it in terms of odds, and they were talking about the time when they're turning 18 and they can bet.
Do you know the brands?
Sportsbet.
Sportsbet.
Ladbrokes.
Neds.
And they're inviting you to wager on the outcome of this game?
Yeah.
Or future games that day.
Much in the way that some kids see it's a rite of passage to eventually have your first drink. And it was just seen as probably just what you do when you become an adult. I don't want to talk about the good old days because I don't know whether they were so good anyway. But the idea of watching a sporting event when I was young didn't have gambling anywhere near it. I mean, you go to the races, obviously, it was connected. But anything else, there was no gambling at all. But now it's become an existential thing, you know. So the broadcasters are saying, well, look, without that revenue, we'll disappear. And the sporting codes too are now in bed with the gambling companies or wagering companies, as they call themselves, because it doesn't sound so bad. And so you wonder what would be left if they, as the federal government's considering now, if advertising shrank to nothing.
And that's a fascinating thread to this. I mean, you talk in the show about the Peter Murphy report, a landmark report into gambling reform in Australia. They interviewed AFL and NRL chief executives. A raft of recommendations. Anthony Albanese announced he'd be taking up a massive 3 of those 31 recommendations as part of the legislation put forward.
Between 6 a.m. and 8:30 p.m., we will cap the number of TV ads for betting agencies at a maximum of 3 per hour. We will ban all gambling ads on radio during school pickup and drop-off. We'll end advertising on jerseys and jumpers and in stadiums. And we'll ban online advertising unless the user is verified as being over 18 and has the ability to opt out.
Some would say that's progress. Other people, like independent politician David Pocock, might have a different view. Well, you spoke to him. What was his 2 cents?
Well, we spoke before any of them had been adopted, and his forecast for what was likely to happen was pretty bleak and kind of came true. I think it had been almost, it was certainly over 1,000 days since the Murphy report was handed down when I spoke to him. It's probably been 6 months, I think, since we spoke. And 1.5, 2 recommendations, which are currently going through the parliament and will be discussed. And, you know, there'll be certain parts of the process that will hopefully intensify those changes, and there'll be other parts which will dilute it. But because it's a communications portfolio that's dealing with it, they have fewer levers than if it was a health department issue. And it certainly the top line of the Murphy report is that addiction and the problems associated with gambling is a health issue rather than simply a issue for the Department of Communications.
The good thing about responsible wagering, if you happen to be a gambling operator, is that it has a tendency to imply that people who can't control their gambling are irresponsible. But in fact, it's not about individuals who are weak-willed. It's about products that are extremely addictive.
So it'd be nice if we moved. It's a baby step, and that's good. I think that's a good thing. I wouldn't be being too cynical about it. It'll just take some time. It's just a pity that, and it's puzzling maybe, that an issue with such cross-chamber support hasn't been embraced in terms of all of the 33 recommendations.
Yeah, it was intriguing in the show to see experts speaking about the nature of it being a medical problem.
A serious gambling habit can basically destroy your life. And I think most of us would want to see the health minister take responsibility for the regulation of gambling. That's the case in New Zealand, for example.
You made the point in the show as well that tobacco ads were phased out of sports coverage. Is it as simple as doing that with gambling? It feels to me as though it's more intrinsically tangled into the broadcasters. Like, they seem to be massively reliant on it. There's obviously huge tax revenue for the government that they rely on. I'm not saying that or these are things that we should, you know, necessarily fight for, but does it strike you as a harder thing to untangle?
Look, I suppose it took a long time for tobacco to be treated in the way that it ultimately was. And same with alcohol, I think. They were all very closely aligned to enjoying a game of football. You know, you would have a cigarette in one hand and a beer in the other. The difference, I think, is that if you were to participate in the sport, unless it's golf or darts, I don't think you walk around with a cigarette in one hand and a beer in the other. With sports betting, you can. It seems to be more invested in the actual game. Smoking and drinking are things you do on the side while you're watching. And you may end up connecting the process of watching a game with the idea of having a beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other. But with gambling, you're right in the thick of it. The result is important in terms of you participating in wagering. The other thing that's different, I suppose, is if somebody's affected by alcohol to a degree that is damaging, you can kind of see it. You can see the problem into the room and stagger over and collapse into a chair. With gambling, particularly online gambling, you don't notice it as much. And it's can be a very solitary experience, and you can't smell it on someone's breath, and you can't see it in the way that they're walking around. So usually when it becomes a problem that has to be dealt with by a bunch of friends and relatives, you're really in the thick of it. You know, you're in a lot of trouble by that stage. And usually the only reason people know is because you've asked for help, and it's because you've run out of money, or you've bet the farm, or you've lost your partner in a marriage. So those consequences are more severe and dire than perhaps would have been the case with alcohol and tobacco.
You can catch Going for Broke on ABC iView, three-part series, cracking watch. Sean McCullough, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Headlines. A big day in the NRL. Kieran Foran has made the rare jump from caretaker coach to full-time lockdown for the next three seasons with Manly. That's the end of 2029. He's so young that his new contract will expire before he turns 40. Given the club has won 7 from 9 games under his watch, it seems like a reasonable course of action for the Sea Eagles. Elsewhere, PNG has landed another strong recruit. Connor Watson has been locked down for 2 years from 2028. But plot twist. Next year, he will go to the St. George Illawarra Dragons for a bridging season. The Rooster has played 5 games of origin, is notoriously a strong leader, and can play hooker, lock, or in the halves. The Chiefs have now Alex Johnson, Jerome Luai, and Watson. Tennis, where the Serena Williams comeback is on. The legendary women's player has accepted a wild card into the doubles at Queen's in London. The 23-time Grand Slam singles champ has posted to social media along with a sponsor saying, "I guess everybody has heard the news." Who Williams might play with is unclear. Queen's is the traditional lead-in event for Wimbledon, so the question is now, obviously, will she play the All England club? Further afield from that, Serena is an LA girl. The 2028 Olympics are in LA. We're getting carried away. Meanwhile, at the French Open, current world number one Aryna Sabalenka just beat Naomi Osaka 7-5, 6-3 to reach the quarters. In the men's draw, only 2 of the remaining 8 blokes are inside the world top 5. Felix Auger-Aliassime is 4th, and Alexander Zverev is ranked 2. Brazilian young gun João Fonseca is one to watch. He is on an absolute tear. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny.